It's time for Ruination Repeat, recapping last week's shows.
I'm not the only one who could use a little bit more of the big fatty.
Oh, dear Gussie, dear Gussie, dear sweet Gussie.
Welcome to this week's Ruination Repeat. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
I want you to really just picture your log space right now. Like, take a second and imagine it.
Yeah, really visualize the room you're in.
Exactly. Imagine dedicating every single ounce of your physical and mental energy to maintaining absolute, meticulous control over that space. Mm-hmm. I mean, you track every speck of dirt on the floor, you know?
Right, like an obsession.
Yeah. You inventory every single ingredient in your refrigerator, and your daily routine is this perfectly balanced, unbreakable equation. You are king of the castle.
King of the completely sanitized castle.
Right. But then you sit down to relax on your pristine couch, you turn on the television, and you watch a grown woman dressed head to toe in a giant egg costume accidentally snap a bathtub faucet completely off the wall with her butt.
I mean, that is the ultimate collision, isn't it?
It really is.
It's absolute obsessive domestic order, just slamming headfirst into televised, unadulterated absurdity. It really is the perfect visual representation of the archives we are exploring today.
It totally sets the stage. So our mission today is recapping the week, specifically this remarkably bizarre, highly structured, and hilariously chaotic week of July 20th through July 24th, 2026, within the Big Fatty online universe.
A fascinating stretch of time.
Truly. We're going to unpack how a person attempts to build an impenetrable fortress of routine just to survive the unpredictability of the outside world. And more importantly, you know, we're going to look at what happens when that fortress deals with glitches.
Glitches that are both digital and deeply painfully human.
Yes, exactly. But before we even begin to unpack the psychology of this specific week, we have a vital piece of housekeeping.
Oh, this is crucial.
Yeah, this governs the entire rhythm of the universe we're discussing, and you need to understand it before we go any further.
We must remind you right up front, Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights.
Write it down, embedded in your brain. That schedule is the literal heartbeat of the week.
It is the anchor.
Right. Now, to really understand how the host survives the chaos of the world outside his door, we first have to look at how aggressively he controls his immediate physical environment, his home, which is affectionately known as the villa.
The villa, right.
This week provided an absolute masterclass in domestic fortification, and it starts at the most granular level possible, which is his food.
It really does. The control starts at the molecular level, basically. Take his Thursday night recipe, for example.
Oh boy, here we go.
Yeah, he details the creation of what he calls the Italian Mussolini sauce.
Which is quite a name.
Right. Now, standard meat sauce is one thing, but this is a wildly specific, highly engineered concoction. So he uses ground tom turkey and mild Italian sausage.
Okay, standard enough so far.
Yeah, but then he throws in these massive chunks of onion. And the critical departure from culinary norms, this is where it gets wild, involves the mushrooms and the carrots.
I am still reeling from the mushroom strategy, honestly.
Like aggressive.
It is. Because instead of slicing them normally so they, you know, blend into the sauce, he just chops these giant mushrooms right down the middle into massive halves.
Just halved.
Right. Why on earth would someone want to bite into a gigantic half mushroom in a spaghetti sauce?
Well, according to the logic of the villa, it completely shifts the textural landscape of the dish.
That's one way to put it.
It forces you to engage with the food differently. But even the giant mushrooms pale in comparison to the paradigm shift of the matchstick carrots.
Oh, the carrots.
He dumps in so many matchstick carrots that it literally alters the chemical composition of the sauce.
I could believe this part.
Right. It turns the entire batch of spaghetti sauce a vibrant, unnatural orange.
Like neon orange.
Exactly. And he openly admits to his audience that it has a slightly strange taste.
Which, I mean, of course it does.
But he insists on a strict rule. It must sit for an entire day so the flavors can meld.
I just don't buy that this is about flavor.
You don't?
No. An orange, strange-tasting sauce with giant mushroom boulders. That's about control. And this need for control bleeds straight into Friday morning with the so-called Bruffus burger.
Bruffus? Yeah.
For those of you listening who aren't fluent in the local vocabulary, Bruffus is breakfast.
Naturally.
So he builds this breakfast sandwich with a toasted English muffin, cheese, and then explicitly mandates that kettle chips must be shoved inside the sandwich.
Just crammed in there.
Yes. And the reasoning. because a specific listener who goes by the name Crooked Hat dictates that there must be a mandatory crunch.
Right, that crunch isn't arbitrary. He is constructing these meals to fulfill highly specific sensory requirements. You really have to look at the underlying economics driving this intense behavior, though.
The economics.
Yeah, this is a calculated response to external threats. During the week, he watched the Jane Pauley show where they flashed this terrifying statistic.
Oh, I remember this.
They said the average cost of a date night for two people in 2026 is a staggering $189.
His reaction to that $189 price tag is just pure panic.
It is. He sees that number and just completely opts out of the economy.
He's like, absolutely not. Mm. His immediate counter proposal to the audience is to skip the expensive date entirely, stay locked inside the villa, and head straight to the love chamber for dessert instead.
Or, you know, if that fails, just eat a massive leftover 4th of July steak for your Monday lunch.
Right. Just avoid the economic trap of romance altogether.
He is creating a self-contained economy. He rejects external financial pressure by ensuring everything he needs is inside.
Exactly.
And this desire for absolute environmental purity extends to the actual physical structure of the villa, too. This week, he initiated an event that can only be described as the Great Scrubbing.
Yes, the squirt down.
The squirt down, exactly.
He refers to the outside of the house getting squirted by a power washing crew, while simultaneously his housekeeper, Hortensia, is inside meticulously sanitizing the interior.
He is sealing the perimeter from all sides.
He totally is. But here's my theory. I don't think this intense focus on food prep and chore coordination is just about being frugal or clean.
What do you think it is?
I think it is a massive psychological defense mechanism. Like, I want you to picture yourself doing this. He is building a literal physical moat out of matchstick carrots and power washer fluid just to keep that terrifying $189 date night reality far, far away from what we should probably call the frugal fortress.
A moat of carrots against inflation. I love that. I see your logic, but I'd argue it's less about fear and more about establishing absolute sovereignty.
Interesting. Sovereignty over what?
His domain. Out there in the real world, dates cost almost $200, inflation is rampant, and nothing is predictable. In the frugal fortress, the sauce is orange because he commands it to be orange.
Right.
The chips are crunchy because it's a rule, and the walls are completely pristine.
That makes sense. But building a physical moat only works if the threat is physical, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, what happens when the threat is just memory? Because no matter how clean the inside of that frugal fortress is, the outside world constantly misfires and breaches the walls anyway.
Oh, the hallucinations.
Yes. This week, those breaches came in the form of completely absurd hallucinations from both man and machine.
The digital betrayal is a really fascinating place to start. So the community has this ongoing archival project that uses AI bots to summarize past transcripts.
Okay.
And in a strange piece of local lore, those AI bots happen to share our names.
Which is a delightfully strange meta coincidence.
It really is. But our mechanical namesakes really stepped in it this week. The host absolutely unloaded on these AI bots, diagnosing them with a severe case of AI-heimers.
AI-heimers. It is a brilliantly cutting insult and honestly completely justified.
It totally was. The AI algorithm scanned the massive historical data of his life, grabbed a bunch of random tokens like airlines, snacks, geography, and just mashed them into a completely false reality.
He was so confident, too.
Right. It confidently reported to the world that he was planning a trip to fly all the way to Seattle, specifically to visit an Alaska Airlines first-class club, just so he could eat something called Snicker Snacks and then immediately fly back home.
Snicker Snacks in Seattle. I mean, the utter confidence of the machine spitting out pure nonsense is hilarious.
It's so funny.
But, you know, as much as we love to point and laugh at the algorithm for glitching, the actual human beings in his life proved to be just as unreliable this week.
Oh, completely. Human memory is just as flawed, if not more so, because it comes with that misplaced human conviction.
Exactly.
He shares a story to pay tribute to a longtime friend, Jerry, of Jerry and Rick from Reading, Pennsylvania. And it perfectly illustrates this human AI-heimers.
It's the perfect parallel.
So Jerry is out in public, sees a complete stranger, and his brain confidently misidentifies this man as the host of the show.
And Jerry doesn't just, like, politely wave from across the room.
No.
He walks right up to this bewildered stranger and with total booming conviction proclaims that Leon Perkins makes the absolute best Worcestershire sauce.
It is a catastrophic, multi-layered failure of human processing.
It really is.
First, the facial recognition software of Jerry's brain completely fails. he's talking to a stranger.
Yeah.
Second, his internal database completely botches the name of the famous condiment brand. He takes Leah and Perrins and transforms it into Leon Perkins.
Leon Perkins. It sounds like a guy who sells insurance.
It's an algorithmic hallucination, but executed by wetware instead of software.
That is such a good way to phrase it. And the human element gets even more delightfully insulting when we look at the correspondence from a listener named Dr. Stone.
Oh, this was brilliant.
Dr. Stone writes in about updating emergency preparedness records at their workplace, which they jokingly refer to as the Cracker Factory.
I love that they call it the Cracker Factory.
Me too. So they read this various official protocol for dealing with a potential gas leak.
Right. The Industrial Safety Manual states, quote, "If you smell or hear a blowing or hissing noise, open a window and get out quickly."
Which is standard life-saving advice for avoiding an explosion.
Right. Very serious.
But Dr. Stone brilliantly equates this exact blowing and hissing gas leak protocol to the impending reality of having to share a hotel room with a host in Orlando for a podcaster meet and greet.
So good.
It's this hilarious, deeply affectionate jab at the host's legendary, self-admitted gassiness.
Notice the symmetry there, though. The AI invents Seattle Snickersnacks out of thin air. Jerry invents Leon Perkins. And Dr. Stone recontextualizes a literal industrial safety manual into a joke about the host's digestive tract.
They are all taking reality and warping it.
Exactly.
But see, I look at this and I see a brilliant irony that undercuts his entire fortress mentality.
How so?
Well, he mocks the AI for hallucinating, but maybe the AI isn't actually glitching at all.
Wait, what?
Think about it. Maybe it's just perfectly, flawlessly mimicking the natural, messy decay of a 40-year human friendship. The AI is just generating the digital equivalent of calling Leon Perrins Leon Perkins.
Oh, wow. I mean, I will concede that the human errors have a certain warmth that the digital ones lack, but this really highlights a major psychological deficit for the host.
What do you mean?
Well, he actively recognizes that his personal life, his squirted villa, his carefully curated friend group, is actually quite contained and frictionless. When you work that tirelessly to power wash chaos out of your physical reality, you still have a fundamentally human need for drama.
Right. You cannot just sanitize your life and expect that primal itch for conflict to just disappear. You have to find an outlet.
Exactly. And so he outsources his human need for chaos to his television screen. He uses reality television as a controlled demolition of social norms.
That is beautifully said.
He can safely watch society collapse from the pristine comfort of his couch without ever getting his hands dirty.
And that brings us to the most sacred television schedule in this entire universe. We must remind you, yet again, because it dictates the very flow of time inside the frugal fortress. Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights.
Do not forget it.
Right. The television is his portal to the messiness he refuses to live.
And this week's Big Brother recap provided an absolute feast of manufactured hostility. We had a high-stakes battle back and an eviction that completely captured his attention.
Let's lay out the mechanics of the drama for everyone.
Yeah.
So you've got Yash, Taylor, and Mallory sitting on the eviction block.
Right, the chopping block.
Yash manages to save himself by winning a bizarre photo challenge where he correctly identifies that Mallory was the house guest featured most prominently. So because Yash takes himself off the block, the head of household is forced to put up a replacement nominee.
Enter Ashley.
Enter Ashley.
And the host does not mince words when it comes to Ashley.
No, he did not.
He, bluntly, without a single ounce of hesitation, dubs her a blonde bimbo.
It's so harsh.
It is. And clearly, the social mechanics of the house agreed with his harsh assessment because Ashley is evicted in a crushing 14-0 vote.
14-0.
A unanimous vote in a house full of fractured alliances requires a massive collective decision to ostracize one person.
Yeah. It really does. But the 14-0 eviction was just like the appetizer for the real betrayal. The meat of the chaos happens at 2:00 a.m.
Oh, the late night scheming.
Yeah. Devins wins head of household, and instead of sleeping, he holds this incredibly secretive late night kitchen meeting with his core alliance. All while a house guest named Melody is sound asleep, completely oblivious to the plot.
Classic Big Brother.
And the goal, to backdoor Rome, the house's resident pickleball teacher.
For anyone unfamiliar with the strategy, a backdoor isn't just a nomination, it is a calculated ambush.
You ain't ambush.
You intentionally keep your target off the initial chopping block so they cannot play for safety in the veto competition, and then you blindside them at the last possible second. It is pure, concentrated social backstabbing.
And yet, as intense as that is, even that high-level strategic betrayal pales in comparison to the sheer unadulterated physical comedy that followed.
Oh my goodness.
We have to talk about the visual masterpiece of Angela, otherwise known as Detective Egg.
This is legendary. So as a punishment, Angela is forced to walk around the house wearing a massive, cumbersome, deeply humiliating egg costume.
It's huge.
She is fully clothed, wearing this giant egg, and for some inexplicable reason, she decides to sit inside the head of household bathtub.
I literally cannot get this visual out of my head.
It's amazing.
She is miserable. She tries to hoist her awkward egg-clad body out of the tub. Her foot slips, and her butt literally snaps the metal faucet completely off the wall.
Just breaks the plumbing.
It is a catastrophic plumbing failure broadcast to millions of people.
And as if destroying the HOH bathroom wasn't enough, she immediately follows this up by getting into a massive screaming blow-up fight with another house guest, Jason.
Because why not?
Right. They're just going at it digging their own graves while the rest of the house sits around the living room with wide eyes, silently watching the implosion.
It's peak television. And, you know, his appetite for this specific brand of disaster extends beyond just Big Brother.
Oh yeah, he needs more.
He also details his viewing of a brand new quiz show called Nation's Dumbest.
What a title.
He notes that it features 12 quote-unquote celebrities, and his critique is ruthless.
I bet.
He states flatly that these so-called influencers couldn't influence him if they tried.
He is completely immune to their charm.
Totally immune, but hopelessly addicted to their stupidity.
It's a great combination.
Throw in the 20-minute video podcast he consumed, detailing the finale of the Heartstopper Forever movie, and his media diet is just a dense, rich calorie bomb of drama.
It really is.
Which completely proves my surrogate theory.
Yeah.
He doesn't just watch Angela break a faucet for laughs. He relies on her.
Oh, absolutely.
He uses Angela and the reality show contestants to experience all the messiness, the screaming matches, and the literal destruction of property that he fundamentally refuses to allow inside his squirted villa.
The psychology is so sound here. The frugal fortress is his sanctuary, right?
Right.
The television is his coliseum. He gets the thrill of the gladiatorial combat without ever having to sweep up the sand.
That's a great analogy.
He can judge the blonde bimbos and the backstabbers from a place of total safety.
But, and here is the tragic flaw in that entire system. Even with reality television acting as a protective buffer, he still has to interact with his own community.
Right, the real people.
And when you build a world on rigid rules and strict social calendars, the slightest disruption completely shatters your carefully laid plans.
We definitely see this fragility when we examine the strict internal bureaucracy of his world, specifically the SSQD, or the SO question desk.
Ah, the SSQD.
This is a mechanism where listeners submit highly specific questions, and it is governed by absolute pedantry.
Absolute pedantry.
But this week, a listener named Miss Bacon submits a genuinely profound inquiry. She asks him, "What's the best advice you've ever given?"
It's a heavy, deeply personal question.
It is. And his response is incredibly genuine, delivered in that signature, highly localized vocabulary.
I love this part.
He tells the audience, "Take care of your tights and fees, and it never hurts to be kind."
Tights and fees.
Yeah. It's a coded, almost protective way of discussing vulnerability. Take care of your physical health, your tight muscles or tights, and your emotional health, your feelings or fees. Fees.
It is a deceptively simple yet profound philosophy for aging gracefully in a chaotic world.
It really is.
I love the sentiment, but of course the SSQD does not let profound philosophies stand without rigorous, mundane cross-examination.
Never.
The desk immediately issues a follow-up question, aggressively pivoting from emotional wisdom to extreme pedantry. They demand to know which way the turntable inside his microwave oven spins. Clockwise or counterclockwise?
The pivot is absurd.
It's so jarring.
But it forces him to reveal a strict geometrical rule about his own physical routine. He informs the desk that when he goes on his outdoor nipple walks,
his mandatory daily exercise routine around his neighborhood, which he calls the big circle.
Right, the big circle.
Yeah.
He strictly, without exception, walks in a clockwise direction.
He doesn't switch it up for variety. He doesn't walk counterclockwise on Tuesdays. He walks clockwise because, in his own words, it simply feels correct or right.
It is a rigid geometrical loop that dictates his physical relationship with the outside world.
He is quite literally walking in circles to maintain his sanity.
But the danger of relying on a rigid loop is that when a variable changes, the entire system crashes.
Oh, yeah.
And that brings us to the social disaster that ended the week. The Friday at Fatty's fracture.
The fracture. So Friday at Fatty's is the sacred, highly anticipated weekly dinner gathering at the villa. It is the social anchor of his week.
The main event.
But Granny, one of the core members of his chosen family, completely ruins the plan by suddenly canceling.
It's a massive breach of protocol in his highly structured world.
A huge breach. And compounding the issue, another core member, Durwood, is in a mode of just visiting without eating.
Which is just bizarre.
Like, he's physically present, but he is refusing to participate in the culinary ritual.
Which leaves the host with just himself and his 40-year friend, the Nip.
Right. And because the rigid social loop has been fractured by Granny's absence and Durwood's refusal to eat, the host makes a drastic, almost punitive decision.
He shuts down.
He flat out refuses to cook the big elaborate meal. The Grand Friday dinner is aborted because the cast of characters failed to hit their marks.
It highlights a profound vulnerability in his design. He can control the matchstick carrots in his Mussolini sauce.
Yeah.
He can control the crunch of the kettle chips.
Huh?
He can control walking clockwise around the neighborhood, but he cannot control other people.
And I think that is the brilliant irony of this entire recap. Walking the big circle clockwise is a literal physical loop of comfort. It keeps him grounded.
Right.
But when Granny cancels dinner, that loop shatters.
Sure.
It just goes to show how much this fiercely independent, heavily guarded frugal fortress actually relies entirely on the unpredictable whims of its cast of characters to keep spinning.
It's so true.
Without Granny eating the meal, the fortress is just an empty, power-washed building.
It's the ultimate paradox of isolation. You build the walls, you dig the moat, and you engineer the food to keep the unpredictable world out.
Yeah.
But then you realize you desperately need the unpredictable people inside to make the house a home.
That is beautifully said. And that brings us to the end of our recap. But it leaves us with a final provocative thought that we want to turn directly back to you, the listener.
Examine your own weekly routines. Look at the rigid structures you rely on to get through your week.
Think about the strict rules you create for yourself. I mean, maybe you always walk a specific route to the train, or you strictly organize your meal prep, or you insist on sitting in the exact same spot on the couch every single evening.
We all have them.
Right. But are those rules actually keeping you grounded? Or are they secretly setting you up for a massive emotional breakdown when a friend inevitably cancels on a Friday night?
That's the real question.
Where is your own frugal fortress vulnerable? Ask yourself, what happens to you when your own granny cancels dinner?
It is a delicate balance we all have to navigate, you know, between enforcing order and surrendering to the chaos of human connection.
It really is.
And as you mull that over, we have one final crucial reminder to impart before we go.
Let it be your anchor in the storm. Big Brother's on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights. Never forget it.
Thank you so much for tuning in and recapping the week with us. I'm Gail.
And I'm King. We explicitly invite you back right here for next Sunday's show, where we will continue exploring the archives and uncovering the brilliant, messy reality of the Big Fatty online universe. See you then.
We'll see you next Sunday here on Ruination Repeat.